should apologize, because there is another pilot. It's very different.
She'll try it. Oh, yeah, I'll try it.
So that's local brewery making as faithful an APA as they can, right? So then, this one here is a little brewing company called 8Wired. Does number 8Wired mean anything? Probably it does to George. Number 8Wired is a type of fencing wire. It's a certain, I think it's 8mm.
I don't think it's 8 mm.
It's not 8 mm. 8 mm.
8 mm. Maybe.
Because it's been around for ages.
Anyway, it's a thickness of fencing wire. And there's a New Zealand kind of cliche about how if you give a man a couple of feet of number 8 wire, he can fix anything.
Like our duct tape. Okay, I got
you. Yeah, New Zealand duct tape.
Duct tape. Bending
wire
and duct tape.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah, imagine if steel would, if duct tape was made of galvanized steel.
Okay.
So you use it like, you know, you put the bumper back on your car. Mm-hmm. Right, wire around and twist it and you're done, you know? So it's that sort of can-do sort of Kiwi mentality is where the name comes from.
We can have that joke about baling wire as well, we call it.
Right. Mm-hmm. There you go. But ironically, the guy who brews the beer is not a New Zealander, he's a Dane. And he was, tying back into the Emerson story, he was a biochemist in Denmark, and he met a New Zealander girl who was over in Denmark working for some charity thing, his name completely escapes me now, but some worthy kind of cause, and he decided he quite liked her, and so he was going to marry her and move to New Zealand, and then thought, what the hell am I going to do? And he thought, well, I'm a biochemist, so I'm going to brew some beer.
I see the connection.
That's a reasonable thing to assume.
They do that.
And so he did. He got a job at the Renaissance Brewery, which is a really nice little one down in Blenheim in winemaking country. And he kind of started off as their junior brewer. They were just getting busier and busier and busier and needed someone around. And so he joined in. But then when the equipment at Renaissance is not doing anything, he runs beers on their gear under his own name. Mm-hmm. And so his beers are all just a little bit more whacked out and experimental than the main stuff he does for his day job. It's good for him because he doesn't have to buy a brewery to be a brewer. And it's good for them because it means the equipment is constantly making money. Mm-hmm. They couldn't run it permanently making their own stuff. They would have more than they could sell. So it works out really nicely. And then, you know, everyone kind of knows that this experimental brewer is the day-to-day brewer at this other company. So this is kind of what's happening a lot. This is contract brewing must be getting pretty big over in the States as well. But this is where you brew something on someone else's gear. Some contract breweries exist that don't make any beer of their own. They're just there. Like they're a brewery in the shed.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm waiting for a movie.
Yeah, I Orville. I guess it's 3 years old this month.
Yeah.
Contract brewed Butte Creek and sent it to Sweden.
Right.
Yeah, so you're right.
It's getting bigger because the number of people who want to be brewers is higher than the number of people who can afford to build a brewery.
How much does it cost to actually build a brewery?
Oh, lots.
Oh, lots.
I'm not sure, but lots. Yeah, whereas you can, when you're doing the contract brew, you essentially just pay rent on the gear and buy your own ingredients and away you go. Mm-hmm. So it's even better when you're this guy Soren, the Dane, because the gear you're brewing on is the gear that your day job happens on.
So you
know
it
really
intimately.
Well.
Yeah. You look after it.
Yeah.
So this is the beer that made him famous. This is a thing called Hop Wired. Half the beers there.
Smells very apricotty.
Wiry names. And this is him making an American-style pale ale, but strictly using distinctly local ingredients. So all the hops in it are New Zealand-exclusive hop varieties. New Zealand's one of those countries that quite a lot of government-funded research going on in the sort of horticultural field. You know, we're an agricultural country. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. But we develop hops. We have a government department sitting there tinkering with hop varieties, making new ones. And when they make them, they name them after a small town somewhere, and then they lock it up. No one else can make those, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the brewers can buy them, but, yeah. So very, well, not completely different, you know, it doesn't smell like chocolate or anything. It's still
it's
very much kind of powerful fruitiness.
Pungent.
But it is. It's kind of, but it's
very different.
Warmer almost, like more.
I was
going to
say it's kind of lighter tasting.
I think it's a bit lighter. I think it's not just one giant wallop. There is more kind of going
on.
Yeah.
The brewer himself says it's not just your big grapefruity APA. It's more like a fruit salad-y type, punch bowl type thing. Because he's using hops always have these kind of distinctly sort of, you know, fruity characters, probably that type of hops do.
This is way more complex in terms of the different flavours going on.
Yes. more different hop varieties. A classic like American pale ale will basically be built around that cascade hop. And that grapefruity cascade hop will be the really dominant thing. Tuatara's APA does use two others as well, to just kind of round it out a little bit. But this is using four or five completely different character hop varieties. Like he says, you know, like a punch bowl or a fruit salad.